The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
So finally, lads, after all the shadow boxing, we know the quarterfinals. We know the next three quarterfinals. One quarterfinal, obviously, is over. Cheddar's here with me in studio, and Brian is on the phone. So Wexford have to go to Galway after their great win against Kilkenny. So the way these leagues have worked out, Dublin top in Division 1B has thrown a complete spanner into the work. So Wexford, after coming second in 1A, have to go away to Galway, which you would think they might have avoided Galway after having that good result. Tipperary, after being almost favourites for relegation, now get Dublin, because Dublin topped 1B, and they get home to them, and Clare and Waterford are going to toss. So Waterford, after coming back against Galway and getting a goal in the last minute, their prize is a tougher match than what they would have got had they lost to Galway. Arguably, there could be Clare away instead of Wexford at home. So that's it, all in a nutshell. All the three quarterfinals are going to be played next Saturday and next Monday. We don't know that yet at the time of recording. So obviously the
I think they're all down for Saturday now.
Are they all down for Saturday, Brian?
Water won the toss and they have home advantage.
Right, okay, Walsh Park. So they want Walsh Park to become a bit of a fortress, and they went some way of getting that. So they're all on Saturday. That's good news anyways for the podcast, because we're going to be in here on Monday, and I was thinking we'd lose out on one. But the interesting one here, lads, is Cork and Kilkenny, the relegation match. Brian Cody didn't really want to have anything to do with this relegation match. He says, all I know is we were asked during the week whether we were happy to let one team go into one group and the other team to go into the other, and I certainly wouldn't, and I certainly would think that would be the sensible thing to do. It would be a futile match really, but whatever happens, happens. But Cheddar, now they're going to want to play this, because Cork had Harnedy sent off and Kilkenny had Conor Delaney sent off, so they need the game for them to serve their match suspensions now.
No, I think it'll work out well for them in that regard. All right. Look, I think you know they might like the game anyway. I know it's only another week, but it's another game under the belt for both teams, really, I suppose. You know, bear in mind that the Munster and Leinster championships are starting pretty quickly. You know, May the 11th, May the 12th will come around pretty quickly, and they're going to have to give some time to club games and that. So if you're a county management team, you probably would welcome the game, although it doesn't have any bearing on anything as such. But just consider Kilkenny and consider Cork for a minute. You know, both of them are trying to blend teams and that. I know Brian has the Ballyhale players to come back after the following weekend. He won't have them for that game, obviously. But you know, both of them are still trying to blend teams. So I think, in a sense, they might welcome the game, even though there's nothing really at stake.
Yeah, futile, although Cody did mention it. What did you make of the sendings off anyway, Brian? Harnedy, definite red. Conor Delaney,
you know what?
I knew you'd say no way to Conor Delaney. You don't mind this old jab into the stomach or whatever kind of stuff goes on. You see that as part of the game, right?
Ah, no way that's sending off. Come on, like, where will it end up if that's a sending off? And I know Don Lowe came out last night and said Letter Law and Bugler agreed with him, and it was all too much agreeing for my liking and that. No way that's sending off. I know he retaliated slightly, but yellow card, get on with the game. Throw it in if you want to, you know, if that's the case. But if we start going down that road, he didn't let slide. But no, Harnedy now, he's a man that's glad of this game going ahead on Saturday.
Yeah, surely that's
going to run into the championship.
Yeah, surely that's a red. That was a nasty one, and you could see exactly where he caught him, and it was a delayed reaction with poor James Barry.
Yeah.
It was about, by the time the message got to his brain that he was after getting one in the Crown Jewels, or, you know, he kind of...
It was a real silly one from Harnedy. It was just pure born out of frustration. And he's not, you know, in fairness to him, he's not usually that type of player. But he had no choice but to walk after hitting him then.
It was actually a funny one, Cheddar, with Bugler talking about this last night, because I have a very, very vivid memory of him doing the very same thing down in Wexford Park. Remember the Clare-Wexford replay, I think it was, back in, it was a 14, the year after they won the All-Ireland, he did the same thing, drove the butt of the hurl, and he got away with that. Mm. Do you remember that happening? Yeah, Conor Delaney's wasn't as extreme as Bugler's was that year. Mm.
I disagree with both of you guys, actually, to be honest with you. I think when you look at Seamus Hurley, I actually looked at this again in the replay. You know, what was he looking at? You know, both players reacted to something, and you know, obviously it's extreme. But I don't for a minute think that Seamus Hurley meant to do what he did. He flicked his hurley back, wasn't looking where he was going. And you look, it's a dangerous thing. He could have struck him in the face or anything like that. Either I'm not saying that. You know, what Conor did was innocuous in comparison to what was done for a long number of years. But I'd say, Brian, look, make it easy on referees. Change that rule if that's the case, so they can use their own interpretation of you know what has went on and that.
Won't change the rule anyways. They're trying to move away from that stuff.
I know
stuff,
they won't,
they?
But that's the point. Like, you know, we can't you know, play in the grey area as such, and we're making it difficult for referees if that's the case. But I think they're the sort of things I'm sort of consistently saying on the show here, Willie, as such, that look, the rule is there. Do you interpret it as a rule, or do you allow a referee make common sense? Because I'll guarantee you there'll be other shows right throughout the year when the same thing will happen, when the panellists that were on last night will form a different view. You know, so we just need to set our feet down on these type of things. I think if it's malicious, I think every player would have a different view. And I think when you look at the two of them last night, there were reactions to something. I don't think either player, I'd probably say Conor probably, you know, had more knowledge of what he was doing actually than what Seamus was doing. So if that's your definition of malicious, then I'd say Conor has probably more an answer for it, to be honest with you. And I'd probably disagree with both of you on that. But I just think
but
that...
one second now. Harnedy knew exactly where Barry was and he swung his hurl back. So just because he wasn't looking in that direction doesn't mean he wasn't trying to give him a clip with it.
I don't think so, Willie. I actually looked at that. He was looking up the field actually when he did that.
Is that not the right thing you would do if you wanted to give a lad a clip?
I don't think so. Look, if you wanted to give a lad a clip, I can tell you clip him. and particularly in hurling. I don't want to dwell on it as such. I just think I'm probably just maybe raising a different discussion here. I think we need to set our feet down on what these are. It's either by rule or it's not. And we just need to say that. When we say that, look, rules are here for, I suppose, guidelines for referees rather than an out-and-out rule. Whereas we will have some rules that simply are rules, you have to abide by them. And I think we just need to rethink that. Otherwise than that, if we're going to referee by rule, we'll have very little flow in hurling, I can guarantee you.
Yeah, Cody wasn't happy about it. Cody said, what I saw really was the referee blew the... This is the Conor Delaney one. What I saw really was the referee blew the whistle for a free, turned around and walked back up the field. The crowd shouted, he turned around and gave a man a red card. That's what confused me. So he's trying to say that the referee didn't even see it, but reacted to the crowd. So I don't know.
I'd say Willie Bryan was getting in his say early there for the appeal to Croke Park next Monday night.
Maybe.
That's what he was doing.
It wouldn't be surprised. I don't know if any of you spotted, Rory O'Connor was fairly fired up for the game yesterday. He was tearing into things. He was getting involved in things I hadn't seen him before. But he went to hit Conor Delaney at one stage of the second half and he ran 100 miles an hour into Conor Delaney and just bounced straight off him onto the ground. I went, Jesus, this Conor Delaney is a hardy bit of stuff. There was an example in football years ago of Stephen O'Neill running into Neil McGee, and Neil McGee's just jogging out as normal, not even seeing where he was, watching where he's going, and Stephen O'Neill tried to blindside him and just hit him with a shoulder and completely bounced off him. It reminded me of that.
Willie, before you go off that point there, I might remind you yourself there of sometime you're on TV with the Rock at one stage there as well, and you sort of bounced off him
true.
As well.
Yeah, that's true. Niall Buckley got me a good one too that people seem to really enjoy watching as well. He got me in Croke Park. But look, I'm only a little slip of a fella, Cheddar. I didn't trade on hits. let's move to a beautiful little piece of skill here. Was the Shane Bennett sideline, and how has this not happened before, Les? This was absolutely beautiful. Now there's so many different layers to this. I am arguably more impressed with Jamie Barron for noticing that it was touched than actually with Shane Bennett for actually doing a Cheddar. Like, talk about being on the same wavelength here. Like, I mean,
this is rehearsed stuff, Willie.
It's rehearsed stuff.
It's not the first time it would have happened. Actually, I can go back into the noughties. I was involved with a wonderful club in North Tipperary called Moneygall, and I remember we tried that in the North Tipperary Championship one day, almost identical to that, and the referee blew it back and he blew a free the other way, and I nearly and really had a heart attack running into the field. See, to them that this is within rule. You only need to be 30, the receiver needs to be 30 metres away from the ball. That rule is there for a number of years now at this stage. You raise a good point though. It's surprising that teams don't use other little means of, you're really trying to retain possession from static plays here. And it's surprising that there aren't more, you know, innovative ways of actually doing that of a sideline balls. And probably the success of people scoring from sideline balls now actually reduces that happening in the future. But I thought what was brilliant was the body language of the person taking the ball. You know, I'd say nobody in the place, you know, thought he was going to do with it what he did.
No, absolutely not. And I don't, like, I mean, the thing about this though, Brian, is, and Cheddar makes the good point there, it's you might be tricking the opposition, but you're also tricking the referee and the linesman. Like, would Bennett have had to whisper to the linesman, I'm taking this, I'm touching this, you know what I mean, to make sure that it's not getting blown up? Because just looking at it,
and I'm glad Cheddar said that, because that was going to be my point. Up and down the country there isn't a referee would let that go in club hurling for $1 million. No way. I can tell you now, there's no way that get away in Offaly club hurling. There'd be war, and teams would go nuts. So they'd definitely pull it back. If they were unsure at all, they'd be pulled back. As Cheddar said, you end up with a free going against you. So if you're a little bit of a genius, a little bit of work, you'd end up being really on the tail end of a bad decision by the referee. But I suppose you can understand the aspect from inter-county. There's a lot of more people involved, and they can see what's going on. But they should have really kept that one up the sleeve for championship. As brilliant as it was, I'd love to see it kept for championship. Everyone's going to be watching like a hawk now.
There's so many different parts of it. Like, I mean, I can see that happening in a championship. I was trying to look out for the linesman in the actual clip, and he's not really in it. So, like, I think the referee and the linesman deserve a huge amount of credit for copping this. Talking about having your eye on the ball.
Yeah, fully agree, yeah. Carl Mannion ran the other way completely. And,
yeah.
You know, just followed the run of Shane Bennett, never noticed. Because it did, in fairness, it looked really innocuous that he just was, you know, oh, I'm leaving it to you.
Yeah.
You know, so it was beautiful piece of skill.
Yeah.
And Jamie Barron, I thought he'd actually taken another few yards. Fairness to him, he clipped it over fairly quickly the minute he got it up into the hand. You know, good score still.
Yeah, would you be doing that kind of in training? You know the real enjoyable part of training is, well, probably not anymore now because they're all doing their rollers and their stretches and they do their warm-ups. But I used to love the 15 minutes. Training would start at 7:30. You'd get out on the field maybe at 7:15, 7:10, and you'd be kicking points. You might go over and have a sideline competition. You might have a free, you might have a penalty competition. You'd be doing all messing with your friends. And I used to love that 15 minutes before training. I presume in hurling you might be doing little bits and pieces like that as well, Cheddar, or the players would be.
I know you'd practice that. But bear in mind this was in Welsh Park yesterday as well. So you know, a forward at that calibre getting the ball in that area would shoot pints with his eyes closed most of the time, particularly in his own ground, because that's where he's practicing shooting and that. So I wasn't surprised that it happened, but it was very, very well executed. And I just thought the body language of it all was really, really good.
Yeah, I thought Donal Logue put it well last night. If you want the two fellas to rob a bank, then and if you wouldn't want Cottle Mannion as the detective trying to catch the two guys. Yeah, I thought that was a good one. And Shane Bennett as well for his goal. Donal Logue pointed out the hurley was turned the wrong way as well, Brian. Does that make it that little bit? I actually think the tip of that hurl might have made it easier for him to scoop it in. No, Donal Logue was making out that was actually making it more difficult.
It did indeed, actually, because when the hurl is turned the wrong way, it can feel completely wrong in your hand. And he did well, in fairness to him. I don't know how it ended up that the nose of the hurl was turned down. Got an initial touch on it, went out by the keeper, and he just dived at it. And I know Joanne was going on last night, but how did he sneak it in by the post? But, you know, a good corner forward like that, you'd expect to sneak it in, but he dived, and it was a great score, to be fair. But brilliant work, great move to the centre by Waterford, and gave the ball to the man in the best position, and that's exactly what you want from your forwards. You know, he didn't just clip the ball over the bar; they went for the juggler and it paid off.
Yeah, exactly. Right, so we have to mention the Carlow Rising here first, Brian. I have to apologise for this. So, in 62 years of league hurling, this is Carlow's first ever away victory in a Division 1 game. So, like, I mean, that's a fair old stat. You have Colin Bonner saying after the win yesterday, it's nearly surpassed anything like we've done so far, from winning the Christy Ring to the Joe McDonagh and Division 2 League. And this is really like a promotion to a new Division 1. So they're staying in Division 1. They were down by 11 points and they were a man down, Cheddar. Because we're obviously going to talk about Offaly in a minute. But, like, I mean, it's obviously important to mention what a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant comeback and win this was for Carlow before we even talk about Offaly.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Brian will obviously comment more on it, having been at the game. But just to take the game on its merits itself, to be a man down for that length of time, and to be that far down from a team, you know, that you know, wouldn't have had a recent history of those type of comebacks, was very, very good. Brian might comment on, you know, how Offaly dealt with it or didn't deal with it. But look, it reflected very well in Carlow. But look, we've spoken up Carlow a good bit here on yeah. previous shows, Willie. This is nothing new. You know, they have a decent team, and, you know, they've had a few results recently. I mean, Offaly beat them, you know, a week ago, but that was with two players scoring 4 goals and 4 points out of 4-8, and, you know, that type of scoring just wouldn't be great, and particularly when the two players are Joe and Shea Dooley and that. Yeah. So I'd say, even though Carlow were very disappointed with that last game against Offaly, but when they went back and reflected on it and looked at the scoring and look at the chances that they had that they didn't see out in that game, they certainly saw some light in the game against Offaly in terms of the relegation final. And even though they fell, you know, pretty seriously behind, had a man down in that, they still, I'd say, had belief that they could win the match based on what they saw the previous day in Carlow.
So how bad was it then, Brian? Like, I mean, how did Offaly use the extra man? I know the two Carlow goals were kind of fluky enough, but, like, I mean, that's poor defending to not be able to defend, you know, high balls in like that as well. Like, I don't know where to start with it. Maybe how did they conspire to lose this game?
Yeah, well, look, first of all, I have to say congratulations to Carlow. That is important to note, and I'm glad you started with Carlow because it is a great story, and their work over the last number of years deserves credit, and their performance in that second half yesterday deserves credit too, and none more so than their two main forwards, Chris Nolan and Marty Kavanagh. I thought they were absolutely excellent, as good as anything I've seen around. I tipped Chris Nolan for the game. I knew he'd have a huge bearing on that game, and you know, he got 1-4, and Marty Kavanagh ran the show from centre forward, both from play and from Reeves. So, you know, kudos to them. But you're right, they did get a little bit of luck in terms of the two goals. They should have been dealt with from an Offaly perspective. The one thing is, you don't want the ball bouncing around the square and hanging around there. First goal, comedy of errors. They tried to flick it out and then ended up hitting off a Carlow man, I think it was Seamus Murphy, and ended up in the back of the net. And the second goal was even something similar. It looked like ball left in the square, Owen Cahill probably should have got it out of danger, and you know, it somehow bounced around and Chris Nolan got it into the net. So that obviously was the platform, and this it narrowed that gap of 11 points very quickly, and that's where then the malaise set in from an Offaly perspective. The players started to panic on the field. They had a spare man, as you said. The sweeper, though, was absolutely null and void. The players themselves switched off. It was almost like they were all hurting as if they were the spare man. You know, ball watching as opposed to marking their man. That actually, I was pulling my hair out at times yesterday, just watching, you know, the five defenders that are marking their forwards. They should just literally watch their man at all stages, manhandle them as best you can. Waterford were brilliant at the likes of Noel Connors, Barry Cockington. They were exceptional at that sort of stuff, and they left the sweeping to Tadhg Na Bhorcha. Unfortunately, Offaly, as I said, they were all ball watching, two and three of them going up under the one ball. Carlow man would bring it down to feet, and the Offaly lads were confused and not knowing who was going to the ball then at that stage. So it just became a comedy of errors. They did try to work the ball out through the lines, and it just broke down time after time again. So, you know, Donal had one comment last night in terms of, you know, Offaly being slow to embrace the modern game. The problem is we don't have the talent to embrace it at the moment, or we haven't done the work with the current players that are out there at the moment. And they tried it, but it broke down time and time again. Every time they were under pressure, Carlow were able to turn it over. I'd say it happened on 3 or 4 occasions where they turned it over and got simple scores. So, you know, just hugely disappointing. You should not be, I don't care what happens, you should not be losing a game 11 points up, completely dominant in the first half. And I mean, in all aspects of the game. And a man up then as well for such long periods of the game. You should not be losing that game.
The disappointing thing here, Cheddar, is that you have an extra man from the first half. So you actually have your team at half time to actually completely run through this. This isn't just a shock for the last 20 minutes and it's hard to get a message in. This is actually being able to sit down at half time with a big lead, give the role to whoever was, explain to them what you want. But that, according to Brian's...
Can I come in on that? Actually?
Yeah, go on.
Because we actually made a tactical switch at half time. Well, I'm made to believe it was tactical switch, and I couldn't understand it. We brought on a player who'd be better known as a man marker, Dermot Short. And he went straight in as the sweeper. And they took off a guy called Aidan Tracy, his own clubman in St. Rhinus, who'd be a well-noted striker of the ball, a long-distance striker, and a very good long-range free-taker as well. And very comfortable for large periods of that first half when he was on the ball. So I couldn't understand that tactical switch, and it really backfired. And after about maybe 15, 20 minutes of the second half, they had to abandon Dermot Short as the sweeper. He went out to wing-back, and... They moved the other wing back, Damien Egan, back into the sweeper. But at that stage, the rot had set in, and Damien Egan didn't, he's only a guy, he didn't, perform as well in there as a sweeper either. He's only a guy that's on the scene for the last, since Kevin Mann came in as manager since last year. So he's not a guy with huge inter-county experience either. So management have to hold their hands up from that perspective.
Yeah, I wonder, is management, are they holding their hands up? Or Kevin Martin seems to get away with a lot, and I can understand why, because obviously last year it started off so well and first impressions make a huge difference, and the result against Dublin and then the result against Kilkenny. Whereas if this year had been his first year and he backed it up the second year with good performances, you'd probably have him pigeonholed as a bad manager. Do you know what I mean, Cheddar? Like, I mean, he's got off to such a great start that he seems to be above criticism this year. Whereas, like, I mean, that doesn't sound like a glowing kind of report from his point of view. And for me, doing the reading up a little bit, like, I mean, he's been using a lot of excuses throughout the league. So he blamed the fitness after they're hammered by Waterford. He sacked the fitness coach. He says, if your fitness levels aren't there, your head goes and your hurling goes. It's something we're addressing at the minute. So then after the Laois match, he blamed his players. He says the players have to ask questions about their commitment there tonight, whether they gave it everything or not. And then after yesterday's match, he says, today is very hard to take, but it is what it is. We tried, but we got turned over. A little bit kind of a matter of fact, it is what it is. You're down in 2A. It's more than it is what it's more than it is what it is.
Yeah, I might just deal with the last point first. Willie, obviously, it's crucial now that, awfully re-motivate themselves and re-energise themselves for the Joe McDonagh. And your comments directly after the match yesterday are the start of that. And I might have been a little bit surprised with Kevin on that, your attention to detail has to include that. What you say, how you carry yourself, your body language, all of those things are crucial to you as a manager and the message that you were particularly given in your dressing room and to everybody else as well. So I was a little bit surprised with that. And this, on the second point, I think Kevin's lost some players this year. Brian, you might correct me if I'm wrong.
He's a lot of injuries, yeah.
And he's a number of injuries. And, this is ultimately the problem here, and awfully have fell into this trap now. They weren't there in Brian's time or for 30 years before that. They had a very high quality, big numbers on their big volume of quality players in their panel to be able to call on, and they're able to deal with these things. That's not as easy to do when, you have a number of players that are not in the panel, or you have a number of injuries or something like that, and now your quality drops significantly, maybe from number 18 up to number 30. And it's very, very difficult then to make things work. I'll just go back to the earlier point, though, because it's a really, really interesting point, and I think Brian has covered it. Any team now in hurling that's not able to operate the sweeper system, has to really ask themselves why, because it can happen to you in two ways. It might be forced on you that the other team is playing that, so you are going to play a sweeper for a while until you settle down. Like yesterday, you may have a player, or they may have a player sent off, and you will want to use your sweeper for a period of time anyway, until you sort of establish yourself in the team. You might want to push somebody up to midfield then, or up to the forwards after that, if that's what you chose to do. But the type of player that you use for that is absolutely crucial. And the other thing is that the defenders play their position conditions and play their man. Just because there's a sweeper there, they cannot absolve themselves responsibility for their job. Everybody does their job and the sweeper does his job. And when you look at Davey, when you look at the way Wexford play, you know, if you wanted to look at a good way to be able to play this, well, if you wanted to play it, well, look, here's how it should be done. And I'm surprised what Brian has said, because I would have known the players that he's speaking about here, and you know, you certainly wouldn't have seen him as the sweeper type material, where you need to be a very good reader of the play, very very good vision of you know where the play is going to break, and that you need to be really really quick to move into the breaking ball. You need to be really really quick at securing ball, particularly off the ground, and you need to be really quick to break the line, get front foot, get out in front of their players, and be able to distribute good ball into the forwards. And, you know, you should know who that player is, and the team should rehearse that type of play. You might only do it for 5 minutes a week, but when the situation arises, you just go back to type. You go back to what you rehearsed, and off you go. You might change it again after 10 or 15 minutes if you wanted to do that, but you've got to be able to operate it. And what Brian has described would be a little bit confusion. And, of course, you're sort of, you know, you don't have clarity in your team then about who's to do what job. And when that happens, then, it you know, things can go out of kilter for very very quickly at that stage.
Yeah, Brian, what did you make of Don Logue's comments about the different voices? So he says, a third point I'd make, this is just my feeling, some of the loudest voices and what you might consider the biggest influencers in Offaly over the last number of years, when it comes to tactical innovations, they always seem to be the voices of regression. I think those voices of regression, if they were given another brain, they'd be twice the voice of regression. I don't know if he's including you in that, Brian, or did you take that personally? Yeah? I know Michael Dignan didn't take it lying down anyways. He came back I would say Declan McBennett in RT, the head of sport, wouldn't be too happy with Dignan's response back to him now, but like, I mean, that's for them to deal with. But what do you think of Don Logue? I suppose if we're talking in the context of the sweeper and those voices, he's obviously talking about Dignan and maybe to a lesser extent Dahi Regan, that if, do you think that their idea of their dislike of a sweeper, you know, and their loyalty towards Kevin Martin, do you think they can influence Offaly hurling and Kevin Martin potentially not really knowing what to do with a sweeper when it does arise?
Yeah, look, yeah, his comments for starters, you know, he had 3 points to his analysis. First of all, he went through the statistics of where Offaly have only won arguably in the 80s and 90s, you know, and that they're black and white. There's no one can argue with that. We've won 4 All-Irelands. So on that basis, he was saying we're not a traditional hurling county. And look, he has a point, but I think, I suppose, you can use statistics to back up any argument. As say, statistics and damn lies. Because we've 4 All-Irelands, Clare have only 4, Galway have only 5, Waterford only 2. If we want to go down that road, well, then there's only 3 traditional hurling counties.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't completely agree with that, obviously. But it is what it is. We did only win in the 80s and 90s. Our underage structure leaves a lot to be desired, and we all know that, and everyone in Ireland knows that. And none more so than the Offaly people. You know, his second comment was on the demographics, the sheer numbers, and we certainly struggle in that point. And maybe we did punch above our weight in the 80s and 90s. But, you know, I suppose in the decade prior to that, we did compete from time to time if we get our players in there and get involved in Offaly. And we ran the likes of Kenny Close many's a time down through the years, particularly 69 stands out in memory. We beat the All-Ireland champions Wexford in the Leinster semi-final and almost won the Leinster final against Kilkenny. So there was always kind of shoots of hope down through the years, and we'd many renowned hurlers that hurled on Leinster teams and stuff like that. So, you know, the hurlers were there, but we just never got together, maybe because of club scene, the rivalry that was there in Offaly. But then the third point, obviously, as you alluded to there, you know, he's having a go at the voices, and both Dignan and Dahi Regan took umbrage to it on Twitter last night as well. I certainly not count myself in that. I'm only a small fish, as Davey would say. yeah, look, I think there's two sides to every story. I think Dignan's own, and Dahi's, I don't know about Dahi's, but I definitely know Dignan obviously has come out publicly and said he's against the sweeper. And like, that's his personal opinion, and I actually won't vilify him for that. If he doesn't like the sweeper, like, he's fully entitled to that opinion, as far as I'm concerned. The thing I think from the criticism Michael might receive inside in Offaly, if we're trying to be objective on this, probably the fact that he hasn't got involved in the Offaly senior management since 2004. He went in as a coach under Mike McNamara, was playing myself, and we reached the Leinster final. And Michael Dignam was absolutely excellent when he came in as that hurling coach. And he had previously managed Meath. And I suppose a lot of Offaly people have been calling on Michael for the last, I suppose, close to a decade now, probably since Joe Dooley left, to get involved at senior level. And he has turned it down on numerous occasions. Now, he's entitled to, it's his own personal, I'm not going to, for one second, comment on, you know, his own commitment to Offaly hurling. He's hugely involved in his own adopted club, Ballinamere, where his two sons are playing for. So he is heavily involved in them, invested a lot of time in that club, and they've won minor and under 21 championships. So he's gone back to grassroots. But I suppose on a wider scale, a lot of people in Offaly would have been pleading with the likes of Michael, who is a huge influence on Offaly hurling because of his role in RT, to help out with the senior team. And as I said, it's his own prerogative not to get involved there.
Yeah, what do you think, Cheddar? Do you think Donalogue didn't need to go there on the third point?
Look, I think he was selective in his analysis, first of all. I'm not so sure that his own county has had a whole lot more success than Offaly in the last 30 years, to be honest with you. So, you know, I think you need to look at that in a wider context. I think the second point about the demographics, they are the demographics, they are the real problems for Offaly now and for Leash and Westmeath and Carlow and maybe to a lesser extent Antrim. Your real hurling hinterland as such is not big enough and it's not populated enough to be able to produce enough quality players. I'm just going back to that point the whole time. I take Brian's point as well. Look, it's not a sweeper, really. I know you're only using it as an example, Woolley, but I suppose the tactic, the way the game's played tactically now, even if you just want to call it a defensive screen where you actually win the ball back and work the ball back up the field again and make it less difficult for the opposition to score, is probably a little bit more sophisticated now than it certainly was than when I was playing. And even maybe Brian might agree even in Brian's time. So you do need to... You need to be, and look, the players will want to look for that as well. You have the likes of Owen Carl. I saw Owen Carl playing in goal below in the Fitzgibbon Cup final there a couple of weeks ago. So there's a lot of Offaly players playing at a very, very high level, and if they're seeing that type of coaching and that type of game planning at Fitzgibbon Cup level, well, they'll expect it in their own county as well, because that's, I suppose, where the game is going. But I just think Woolley, and I just think Brian, be very, very interested to hear Brian's views on this. There's a lot of things going to happen here now with Offaly, and they're probably starting to happen already. And this is, I suppose, if we're looking at business, this is called the business downward spiral. And it's very, very difficult to pull yourself out of this. You know, a lot of things happen here. Enthusiasm dwindles, energy flows out the door. You're getting a little bit more distrust. People are not sort of talking to one another. Then people will get very entrenched views and they won't take risks and all of that. And I can tell you there's a whole pile of literature about business and this, and I suggest that it would be a good place to start, is how do you arrest yourself from this type of a spiral? Offaly certainly have the base to make this work, and the recent history, even though, you know, it won't win matches for you, but have that confidence about having scaled a hill before and got to the very top would be very, very beneficial to you. And I think it would be, and I think, you know, you need to get to the root of the problem here. There's no point in talking about something unless you really, really know what's the root of the problem and what do we need to fix here. But I think one of the things, and there's no point beating around the bush with these things here either, you need to talk hard talk here. And I'll go back and I'll reference back to that saying about the business downward spiral. Almost in all of those cases, and there's a huge amount of literature about this, it's the CEO took his eye off the ball, became less aware of the issues and all of that at that time. And then the company gets into a free fall, and in a free fall you will stay. And there's a huge amount of literature about you know, a lot of really great companies who took their eye off the ball and suddenly they just fell apart and they went out of existence. So I think that's the first thing, and one of the things is to be aware, find out what is the problem, start talking to people, and until you do that, you're never going to get to the stage of actually having the strategic plan in place to actually get there. And look, there's a lot of things need to happen for to arrest that. This is not going to be easy, and it's not going to happen by, it won't actually happen on its own by quality coaching. And I know Brian mentioned this before in terms of the clubs. Clubs need to get their act together in terms of coaching and all of this. That on its own won't work, because you've just failed so far that, you know, the confidence and I suppose the enthusiasm to get involved in offering hurling, whether that's from parents or coaches or players or whatever, is gone so far at the minute that you know, a good coaching and games plan in the county probably won't pull this back. It's going to need an awful lot more. You know, this is open heart surgery time here, as I would think, for Offaly hurling. And when I say that, I say it with regret, but I also say that that's no different than Laois, it's no different than Westmeath, it's no different than Carlow, it's no different than Antrim. I've been, you know, banging this board for a couple of years on this, and you know, unless we might talk a little bit more about that, Willie, because it's such a critical thing at the minute. And look, I'm going to throw something else into the mix here. We've changed the league structure for next year. We've changed it on the whim of top counties who said that the league as it's structured at the minute doesn't give us an opportunity to blood players. Nobody ever asked about, is the league good for the developing counties at the minute? And I think, look, Carlow have proved it. It's great. So we're going to put Carlow now into a championship, and more importantly, we're going to put Westmeath into a league next year, where hopefully they don't, but it would look like that they're going to get a number of pretty serious beatings. Now you're back to where you started. So what was more important for hurling people? Was it to allow Brian and John Myler and Liam Sheedy a chance to blood a couple of players in top counties who are regularly winning All-Irelands, or was it to try and rebuild the game in the Offalys of this world? And, you know, somebody needs to do the hard talking here and call out these people about these serious issues.
So who's going to do that talking? Going to go off topic here, because I was actually holding some of this for Thursday, Brian. I'm tired of hurling punditry in a lot of ways, and I'm tired of the high profile pundits, because all they do is cheerlead the sport, and they don't ever get down and dirty, and they completely ignore the struggles of other counties, and are happy for a championship to be played with eight or nine teams. And for me, if that was football, there'd be up in arms. Be up in arms about what's going on. You look around for talking points for hurling, for the hurling show. There's never anyone giving out. There's never anyone holding. Like, this league is a disgrace. It's a disgrace that it's been restructured for what? To throw Westmeath as lambs to the slaughter, like Cheddar says, so that the others can actually use the league as a warm-up competition and they don't have the threat of relegation. There'll be never relegation from 1A now anymore, because it's just going to alternate, as the Westmeaths will just be humiliated every year. Whereas the way we had it was, there was a nice little mini-league between Offaly, Laois and Carlow, at least. And then the reward of a league quarter-final, which Laois obviously didn't use too well, but we'll mention that in part three. Where are the dissenting voices? Instead of Deignan and Donal Logue, and it was nothing more than petty squabbling between what should be colleagues. Is that, and to be fair, I have to say, Donal Logue, at least with his Offaly analysis, made that show last night some bit interesting, because it was the most boring show I've seen in a long time. When are we going to see a bit of life around the hurling pundits that actually want to improve hurling to at least 12, 13 teams and hold the GAA to account like the football pundits do?
Yeah, and I've been banging this drum for a while, and I am glad Cheddar went to it as well, and I thought it mightn't be for today's conversation also, but I find the hurling, probably because I'm coming from Offaly, it's elitist. It's the top teams have climbed the ladder and they're pulling it up after them.
Yeah.
And it drives me mental. The Munster Championship is sacrosanct. You can't touch it. The five teams are there, and they're five of the top teams in the country, don't get me wrong. But they practically can't be relegated, because even if they finish bottom, the only way they can go into relegation of any sort is if Kerry win the Joe McDonagh. They won't even let Kerry into the Joe McDonagh. We had to cater for Kerry in the Leinster Championship.
Yeah.
you know, the Leinster Championship is the rest of Ireland Championship, as I say. You know, we welcomed in Antrim, we welcomed in Galway. Okay, it took a bit of time, but at least we went somewhere with it, and we've continued to allow that to happen. And at least now Galway are getting their home games, but we're also holding back because of the strong Munster counties making this decision, and that's the way they want the Munster Championship. We're making Offaly, you know, Westmeath, Laois, who else is there? No, Carlow are in the Leinster now. Yeah, so those three, for starters, they can't even play in the Leinster Championship. Like, it's a crazy situation. It drives me mad, being honest. I think Eamon O'Shea had a brilliant idea a couple of years ago, and he was talking about playing your Leinster and Munster straight, you know, knockout championship. You can even have your round robin system, like happened a couple of years ago in the Leinster, for the six teams that I think are more or less on a par, the five that are currently in the Joe McDonagh and Carlow. I think those six teams are on a par, and you know, if they played their round robin system and then feed into the Leinster championship, and then thereafter you could have a kind of a Champions League style four groups of four. And the top two teams in each group go into the A Senior All-Ireland quarterfinals, and the bottom two go into a Senior B All-Ireland. And for the likes of an Offaly and Laois, for instance, we'll never play an All-Ireland final day, let's be honest. Unless, I actually don't even know. I don't even know if there's an unless at this stage. But if they could get to a B All-Ireland and actually play on the same day as a Senior All-Ireland, that could be the greatest day in their careers. And you know, a realistic chance of winning something. But the important thing with that is they still would have had a chance to play against the top teams. They're not being excluded from their own province at the whim of some of the stronger counties. And then on top of that, they're getting meaningful hurling during the summer months. At the moment, you know, we're trying to run off competitions as quick as we can. They did that with the round robin system a couple of years ago. They do it with the current Christy Ring, Lowry Maher, Nicky Rackard, all the competitions down below. They're all run out of the way in, you know, May and June. Got out of there as quick as possible. And we're not even allowing those hurling people, genuine hurling people, to train as hard as any county, no matter who they are, or any of the top stars of the game. They train just as hard. They just don't have the same resources or backing as other players, and they're just shunted to one side and forgotten about.
Yeah, it seems to, for me it's a funding issue. They funded Dublin to the hilt, they won a National League and won a Leinster Championship. They're coming from a base of the Laois and the Westmeads and the Antrims. Look at the improvement of them. Carlow got some minimum funding recent years. Look what they've done with it. Like, I mean, the Wild Geese over in Australia, you know what I mean? Who cares about that? Would that not be better off going to a county like Laois and give them games development money and have the coaches in the schools? I don't see why, without this pressure coming from the top by the high profile pundits, and none of them seem to want to touch it because they're happy with their own counties are going, and they're happy with, I suppose at the end of the day, aren't they happier with an 8 team All-Ireland than they would be with a 12 or a 13 or 14 one, because they've less of a chance of winning? Do they give a shit, Cheddar? Like, I mean, briefly,
the answer,
it's not an easy briefly, they don't give a shit.
The answer is no.
I asked Damien last Thursday, actually. I said, did you actually care? And he pretty much said no, he didn't. Like, should you, I don't mean players like Damien, but high profile pundits should have a responsibility to the game in general, not their own counties.
Yes, but look, it's not their responsibility. They're just pundits. We put in place an organization structure to run the GAA, and it certainly is, it's not a looks like, that the only interest at the minute is to have a championship that's appealing to television and so on, which last year's one. It was a brilliant, brilliant championship. But if you want to actually grow the game, you know, if you want to, we all talk up hurling and we just love the game so much that, you know, some of the times we just, you know, are blinded by the faults. It's played in a small number of counties at the minute, but there are a number of counties that Brian has described already that have the critical things needed for them to step up. And one of those things is a geographical base of a culture of hurling in the area. It's very unlikely or very, very difficult. And this goes for any sport or any walk of life. Unless you have something to cling on to build on, well, then it's very difficult to establish that from grassroots and expect it to actually, you know, bloom very, very quickly. The issue is that the counties that we've described and that Brian has described, six of them, have all a good geographic base for hurling, but they need serious, serious support before they're going to, you know, step up to that level. And I'm only talking about being competitive. I'm not talking about winning All-Ireland's or anything like that. Be competitive against these teams. And look, it just doesn't happen. And you need leadership from the top to do that. Somebody needs to decide that the critical focus of the president of GAA or whoever it is or whatever it is for the next 5 years in terms of hurling is, let's see, can we make a 12-team championship, as Brian has described, in whatever format it is. And Brian has described a good one. The one thing I would say to that, Brian, is that that won't be sustained unless it's underpinned by a real good structured development plan in those counties with special focus on those counties. And Willie, you draw a good example. I've used this the whole time. I work in Dublin here and you know, I saw the benefits in the last 10 or 12 years since that was brought in to Dublin. You know, why can't that special focus be now brought in for those 6 or 7 counties and build? And look, Carlow's a really good example. Your flagship team is doing well. There's great interest in the county. That's the time to really go for this and put the funding in behind it. And I'll just deal with that in a minute, Willie. But I'll draw another example that you're well aware of. Laois in football in the late 90s, I think, won a couple of minor All-Irelands. You were part of it yourself.
I hate talking about that.
The energy in the county at the time, and I'm talking here as a hurling man, was fantastic. Did Laois build on that and make sure that that was going to be sustained for the next 20, 30 years? You know, clearly we didn't, because the results since haven't said that. So I'm just going to go back to that point. You really need to get the right people involved here. And unfortunately, at the GAA level, it's generally speaking done by committee level. And more often than not, we're not radical enough in our thinking to look at this, except in some areas. And if you look at the running of Croke Park at the minute, they appointed Peter McKenna to run Croke Park. It was a radical idea from the GAA. It's not run by committee or that type of stuff. Somebody with real expertise in the area knew how to run these stadiums and operate these stadiums successfully. And it has been done successfully to the extent that he's now been asked to go down to Cork and run Páirc Cliath. Why can't that be done for the coaching and the development of hurling rather than running by coaching? Because what's the real killer in all of this, the real killer in all of this is the politics. And look, I've been this soldier, so I know what I'm talking about here. You can come with a real radical, well-thought-out plan, well-funded plan, so on, and bring it a certain bit along the way. But you waste so much time and so much energy getting everybody to get buy-in and getting everybody on the right track with all of those things. It is very, very difficult. I think that should be flipped on its head, because at the end of the day, most of the people like myself and Brian that's involved are amateurs. Why cannot we get somebody with a strategic vision? He doesn't need to be an ex-hurler. Actually, I'd probably prefer if he wasn't, with a real strategic vision of how to make these things work. There's a bunch of experience in other sports here to do this. And I asked the question of this: why do all the professional sporting organisations have a director of soccer or rugby or something like that? Why is that model good for them, but we're clinging to the same system of committee level and committee driven things in the GAA when clearly they're not working for these counties? And clearly somebody has got to take accountability for the lack of growth in these counties. And I can say with certainty that in all of the large urban areas, and I'm a Port Laoise man, I can say this, and Brian, you may confirm this for Tullamore as well, that the pressure on hurling I think hurling will never recover in some of those larger urban areas because of the pressure of other sports. And that's really driven by hurling is a very technical game. You can go out and coach, as I see every night of the week, you can bring 20 or 30 kids out to play soccer. I could bring out 20 good sheepdogs and they'd play soccer, to be honest with you. Because there's no real... it's a serious issue. Now, the issue I'm saying here is, and Brian, this is what I'm saying about Offaly, that when you get into that apathy, parents and children will pick the easiest path for their kids. This is a really important point, I think. And hurling is such a technical game that if the child is getting peer pressure from the 2 or 3 little kids beside them that are not technically good enough to be able to play the game, they'll simply walk away and play another game. 20 years ago, they didn't have that, or 30 years, they didn't have that. The parents will just simply get the child and go over and play rugby. You could kick it around in a heap of muck and you'd get all right, or soccer or something like that. Hurling is a very, very different game, and it needs to be coached by people really who know what they're doing. And now I'm going to go back full circle, Willie, to your point. It needs money to do that. It's not the only thing, and it's not the only thing that'll cure it, but it certainly will not cure it without money. And it's not GDAs, actually. It's a lot of hours, and you know, it's being able to pay for a lot of hours. And if I just finish on that point, Willie, here's the issue. you have only a certain number of quality coaches in those counties. More often than not, those coaches will get involved with adult clubs. More often than not, they're just after leaving their senior careers, they're starting to build houses and all that, and they're quite glad of getting the few quid for coaching senior teams and adult teams and that. Now you have a dearth of quality coaches, and you're asking people to coach kids in development squads and even in clubs and all of that who may not be fully qualified to do that. And that's where the finance comes in. It's not about GDAs, because, to be honest with you, they don't really work. They can work 37 and a half hours a week, but it doesn't really work as well as if you had a bank of hours funded by the GAA and funded by the county board and not letting the county off the hook here in this either. And if you had that, now you're able to play around and move coaches around the county. And, you know, at least you can make it worth their while to be able to coach on a Saturday or a Sunday and not have to go to other clubs to do that.
Yeah. Geez, I don't know.
I actually had an idea only years ago and was convinced of this, particularly because there's so many students involved in Inverness County Hurling at the moment. That I know this is only a side issue, but the county players should be funded by the county board to go back and coach in their clubs every Saturday morning. I know some clubs will have more hurlers than others, and we can share them out among the clubs. But get involved in the clubs, train them up, get them all to at least level one coaching, have a plan in place, and put out your best hurlers you have on show in the county. Get them back out involved at the grassroots of the clubs, and it also will give them a bit of money because they're investing a huge amount of time in their inter-county careers. They don't really have the time to hold down part-time jobs as well as playing hurling, and you know you can't go work in a pub on a Saturday night, or even holding down Saturday jobs is not great. So I just think it could be a win-win situation. It was a very simple thing that at least would have liked to have seen trialled. If it didn't work, fair enough. But I think there's been lots of good ideas. I know Cheddar had a master plan for Laois. I know I was involved in one with Liam Hogan in Offaly and a couple of other real staunch Offaly hurling people. But we weren't even given the chance. That's the problem. It mightn't have been the best plan in the world, but it was a plan. And it was well thought out as far as we were concerned, the best we could come up with at the time. But we just seemed to meet roadblock after roadblock. And that's what drives me more mad than anything.
Yeah, needs a revolution. I think Cheddar's the man to lead this. I think the GAA could do worse. But I did like the sheepdog. I like the sheepdog one. I was actually holding out. If he says this about Gaelic football now, I'm going to kick him out of the room here. At least you said it was soccer, not Gaelic football.
Brian, on a serious note, what you've just suggested would probably transform a lot of things, but I go back to that point as well, that there's when you're on that sort of downward spiral, there's such distrust about things that, you know, it would need an awful lot of organisation. But that just what Brian has just described there would probably make a big, big difference.
Yeah, congratulations to Westmead, who are going to be playing in the top division next year for the first time in 33 years. So that's fantastic. Joe Quaid, who's a friend of the show, has got them up. They failed last year in the league final and in the Joe McDonagh Cup final. So he's taken them a step further. I think they're lambs to the slaughter. I think it would have been much better them coming up to play Laois and Carlow next year, and it could be in a quarter final. But that's exactly what we're talking about. Congratulations to Wicklow as well, who won the 2B final. So I was kind of tipping Derry, thought Derry might have thrown the game at home because they were true, but I was reminded on Twitter about Wicklow. We'll do something about Wicklow on Thursday's show. So Roscommon won the Division 3A final, and Longford beat Sligo in the 3B final. So congratulations to all them. Right, we've gone way over time on that. We'll come back with Paddy Power performance of the weekend, and we'll try and get in one or two of the other matches.
Remember my mother, the Lord of Mercy, now she's dead. She's 8 years this year. She never saw me hurling live, but she always went to the matches, to the hotel, the two finals, and we got off the bus after the first one, and the first person to meet me was my mother, and she said, "Look, what's meant to be is meant to be." She said, "Keep the head up." I said, "Grand. No problem, ma'am. Thanks." 96, back to the hotel again, first person off the bus, my mother. She says, "Ah, look, what's meant to be, I said, "Ma'am, will give it a fucking right."
First up for Paddy Power performance the weekend is Garode Hegarty. Cheddar, you were in Amour Park on Saturday night. I was watching it on television because I was on babysitting duty. Well, not sure you babysit your own children. I don't know what that's called, just childminding duty. But Garode Hegarty, I have down here in my notes, he was like a minor playing at under 14 level. He was just on a different physical level and at his ease. And look, this is on current form the best team in the country playing, you know, Laois, who just they battled well throughout the field. They just couldn't compete with first touch, the wides, all those things added up, to a really comfortable win for Limerick.
Limerick are All Ireland champions, and somebody has commented on this in the last couple of days. It is very, very difficult to win that, particularly coming from where they were coming from. Look, it really backs up fully what we were talking about, what Brian and myself were talking about for the last 5 or 10 minutes there in terms of the development. Look, Limerick didn't come to where they're coming from, and Garode didn't come to that state of conditioning just by chance. This has gone way back to under 14s, then it's gone way back to a development plan in Limerick called Raising the Treaty, and we're not going to go into the details of that now. But Limerick winning an All-Ireland mostly came from that. And if you look at, that raised all boats. It raised schools level. If you look at the success of Doon CBS and the All-Ireland B Champs, if you look at the success of Arscoil Rea, and then you move that into the third level in UL and LIT and all of that, there's a whole progression and a whole circular thing going on at that level. So back to your point, it's not necessarily Garode Hegarty. There's a couple of unusual things actually about Limerick. They seem to have harnessed an awful lot of very tall, athletic, powerful players. And obviously a development plan doesn't do that. Maybe the parenting skills that you just referred to about childminding might have more to do with that, Willie. But they seem to have a lot of really big, athletic, powerful players. But they're not just that. Their first touch is just something else, and their movement off the ball and their understanding with one another. Clearly, that doesn't just come from, putting the team together and training them for a year. That takes an awful lot of real understanding of players and how to play and all of that. So just back to your point, and Limerick, when you look at Limerick last year, we commented on this a couple of times, Willie, on the show. A lot of the players that came onto the field with Limerick were All-Ireland club medal winners. They were still very, very young. And some of their players on Saturday night, the likes of Peter Casey, I've been following him for a while. I think he's not actually a big player, but they're very, very good players. They have a huge panel of quality players at the minute. At the end of the day, you can still only put 15 players in the field. But the dynamic that you have in your dressing room and the pressure for the jersey and all of those things are really the thing that you're trying to get. And I think John Kiely, I think he's in a great position about that, because you don't have to motivate your team as much as maybe you would if you didn't have that, level of competition for places in your team, because the dressing room does it itself for you. And, he's probably really replicating the Kilkenny model for maybe 20 years, that there was, such pressure for places that you were always looking in the wing mirrors. I think Tommy Welch made that one, or JJ made that comment. No matter what year you were playing with Kilkenny, you were looking in the wing mirrors because you were afraid somebody was going to pass out and grab the jersey on it. So you just didn't allow anybody a chance to do that. So any player coming into the Limerick setup at the minute, if his conditioning levels is not at that level, look, he'll be let go pretty quickly, because there'll be an awful lot of other players behind him. And I think the best illustration of that is Shane Dowlin. I looked at Shane for a couple of years, and he was technically a brilliant hurler, but his work rate and his intensity on the field mightn't have been, it's certainly not is where it is now. On Saturday night, he chased back a Laois player about 40 or 50 metres. He actually caught up with him. Now, that wouldn't have been Shane's form a couple of years ago. So it just tells you that, even a player of Shane's class has to work so hard just to try and get on the team. So that drives everybody else. I just think that, Limerick have something about them that, I think if they really keep together and mind themselves, I think there could be a real force in hurling for the next 10 years and certainly garner a number of All-Irelands.
Brian Cheddar's done a great job there in avoiding talking about Laois, so I'll get you to talk. I'll get you to talk about Laois. The wides were a big thing. The 13 in the first half on their own. I don't know if you'd put that down to nerves. I know Laois are better than that. Even Mark Kavanagh, who would be accurate, was had a couple of bad wides. A couple of things, like a nice little ball might go into the forwards, and it just, it doesn't go up on the hurl, and the Limerick defender is able to come out with it, and you know, just the top teams are able to control that and set things up. You know, like it would be kind of frustrating a little bit in that they're well able to compete, but it, for me, it was a skill. It was a big gap in skill.
Yeah, I was there myself, actually. I was commentating for RT, so I did see it firsthand as well. And yeah, of course, Limerick were impressive. It's not necessarily skill, Willie. It's actually the speed at which to do it. You know, Limerick attack every single ball and have that pace and the hurling, and especially because they continued so long throughout the year last year, that they're doing it on hard ground and they're attacking every ball and they're all pushing each other on. But, you know, Cheddar alluded to it as well about the big players. We see this in football as well with Dublin, and we've seen it with the Kenny Dunchers. That's a numbers thing. They're able to leave off, you know, some of the guys that just don't have that physicality. To me, skill is a given at inter-county level. I think, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, because I'm going to disrespect my own county here, I don't think the pick of Laois and Offaly would compete against any of the top five or six teams. They might compete, but they wouldn't beat them. Not consistently, week in, week out. I just think the game has gone to a new level at that. And I think, you know, fair play to Laois. They did battle hard. They had some poor shot selections, I thought. A couple of their halfbacks, particularly my Manani at centre-back, was very, very quick to get a shot off. And I know if I was playing inside, I'd have been tearing my hair out. And, you know, it was tough when you're hurling inside when things like that are happening. But at the same time, they'd only 1 point from play scored in the first half, and that was Lee Clear. A brilliant score, actually, where he came up the field and scored underneath the stand from about 45 metres out.
Yeah.
But
that was as good as it got, really, for Lee.
Yeah, it was too far and few in between. Limerick just tied with them for long periods of that first half in particular. The game kind of peters out in the last 20 minutes. It was a bit of a waste of time. But there's also a big story there. I don't know what's going on with Charlie Dwyer. And look, obviously, Cheddar, you had him as a player. Like, he is an exceptional talent. And he got sent off for two yellows the week previous and then didn't feature at all. And he was there in the line. He was warming up. He was... You know, I've hurled against that guy, and he is as good as there is around. And Lee certainly can't afford to be leaving the likes of him on the line.
Any word on that, Cheddar? Is that just teaching him a lesson, maybe, or something? But that's what it looks like to me. Or else,
I don't know. You know, they're inside of the camp, Willie, really. But look, Charlie has probably been the best hurler, or one of the best hurlers in the league, and certainly in my time there. And he's a real warrior player as well. He's a player that you know is up for the big day and all of that. And you know you would think he'd be the type of player that you'd need on Saturday night. Yeah. And you definitely need him going into the championship.
It's a fair old punishment, if that was a punishment, to miss out on that home game against Limerick.
Well, look, it would be.
Now, we could have picked up an injury during the week in training. We don't know that for sure.
No, but I think, Brian, I did see Charlie warming up on the sideline. He seemed to be moving all right.
Right.
And, like, you know, the way that would be structured is your conditioning person wouldn't send you out to warm up if you were injured, because right. You can only warm up three players at a time and so on and so on. So you wouldn't do that. Whatever it is there needs to get resolved quickly. Because, you know, Laois or Offaly or Carlow cannot do without their best players. And, you know, you need him on the field. He is a real warrior player. I've known him actually since it's going way back, and I've seen him hurl a lot in Fitzgibbon. He actually dragged Carlow IT to a Fitzgibbon Cup final, and that hasn't only happened once. And he was probably their best player among a number of Kilkenny players and Carlow players, incidentally. Marty Kavanagh was also on that team. I'd say whatever needs to get done there, that if there is something there that needs to get sorted, he needs to be on the field hurling with Laois.
Right, okay.
And another man I just want to talk about was Paddy Purcell, another unbelievable hurler. Much more suited to the midfield, where he's breaking on the ball. He didn't seem to be himself playing a half forward, and actually seemed to lack a little bit of confidence, because he broke inside the challenge of Dermot Burns at one stage in the first half and was bearing down in goal at about the 21-metre line. And Paddy Purcell usually put on the afterburners there and lift the net out of it, and just stalled his own run and got dispossessed really simply. And I just said, that's not a guy hurling with confidence. That's not the Paddy Purcell I'm used to seeing. Again, I'm not inside the camp, and that's not a go at anyone else, but I suppose he's done his best hurling at midfield, where he's breaking onto the ball, and that real elusive kind of cat and mouse type of game of midfielder that he can play But on the front foot, he's exceptional.
Yeah, Paddy Purcell, I thought, was one of the few Laois players that wouldn't look out of place on the Limerick team, I thought, from the other night when he had the ball in his hand. Wexford and Lee Chin is another nomination, as he was outstanding in the second half. And it's great to see him back. Some brilliant points out of him. And maybe his timing is run a little bit smarter this year. Last year, all the talk during the league was that he's a professional athlete and he was flying it in the first round or two. Mm. Whether he's learned from that lesson, because he did definitely run out of steam, and the whole Wexford team ran out of steam by the time the All-Ireland quarter-final came round. But this game, Kilkenny and Wexford, it reminded me a bit like an Ulster football game. There's a lot of hard man stuff going on. There's a lot of laying down markers. And the Irish commentary, there was one thing I remembered from school. They said, re-raw is rula-bula. And that's all I seemed to think there was re-raw and rula-bula going on all over the place. Like, I mean, the conditions didn't help it. But they all nearly follow the same pattern, a lot of these Wexford-Kilkenny games. Cheddar, just really intense physical battles, and Wexford were full value for their win.
Yeah, I actually thought, I suppose on the upside for Wexford, I just thought they bullied Kilkenny a little bit, and you know, you don't see that too often. Yesterday, now I wouldn't read much into the game itself, because Brian, you know Wexford Park well. If the wind is blowing in Wexford Park, it's a gale force from one goal to the other. I don't know how it is, but the wind always seems to blow in the one direction there, and it certainly ruins a game when that happens. And you know, that wasn't dissimilar to yesterday. Kilkenny looked to be, if you look at the first half, you'd say Kilkenny looked very good. If you looked at the second half, you'd say Wexford looked very good. So obviously the wind had a huge bearing on the game. But you'd probably have said that, you know, Kilkenny, because they're Kilkenny and because of their cuteness and that, would have worked some more scores up the field in the second half, even if it was against the gale force wind. And that sort of didn't happen. And I just thought that, you know, Wexford did bully him a little bit. On the downside for Wexford, I listened to the show last night, that Wexford have a better forward division and a better way of method of play, or better of offensive method of play. And to be honest with you, I didn't see that. I just think Wexford still play very narrow. You know, I didn't see a huge amount of creativity of space up front, and you know, a ball being put into space and then overlap runners coming onto the ball and that. I just didn't see that. So I'm not so sure that that they've moved on to a different level and left Kilkenny behind them. I don't think they have, to be honest with you. And I think, you know, if we were to take the conditions out of the game yesterday, I think Kilkenny could have very well won the match. So I think obviously it's a brilliant prelude for the championship game down there. And, you know, obviously you're right, Willie. Of course you set down markers. Individually, players set down markers on the players you're going to be on. Why wouldn't you do that? And oftentimes you'd see that. You'd see some players just seem to have an Indian sign on some great forwards, and it just right throughout their career, that's just the way it works. And sometimes these games, you know, they might serve you well for things like that. Just gain the upper hand physically and just dominate your opponent, and then, you know, that's the way it sort of plays out in future games. But I just thought that I'm not surprised by the rule of bully. Look, that is Wexford. That's Wexford Kilkenny hurling going way back as long as I can remember. There's been always a real physical edge to them. Never ever going over. I've never ever seen them, you know, having a right go at one another. Even yesterday was a bit unusual in that regard, to be honest with you. But there has always been a physical edge to their hurling. To the extent that edge between the two of them has served them well at All Ireland level. And sometimes the Munster teams can't handle that when they get into All Ireland semi-finals and finals. That sort of real in your face hurling.
Yeah, maybe. Liam Blanchfield can be glad that we don't have time to talk about his disastrous effort at soloing out of defence into the wind for the Wexford goal. So we'll move on past that. You mentioned Chris.
Yeah, can I just go back for a second for Davey, because I have to talk about Davey for a second, because you know he's a gas man. You know he'll use, you know, the statistics to suit himself as well, and he's talking about how many players he's used throughout the league, and you know that he took umbrage to I said for a Saturday night that Davey's going for the league.
Oh, yes, was that you he was sentence. Talking about?
Yeah, that was me, yeah. And then the next sentence he was talking about, he goes out to win every single game. So which is it, Davey? And who are you trying to fool? Of course you're going for the league because you try to win every game. So you're absolutely contradicting yourself when you say that. And yes, there's not one person in Ireland wouldn't deny that you'd rather win the All-Ireland and the Leinster final ahead of the league. But don't tell me that Davey's not going for that league gung-ho. Like, Wexford I think if I stand corrected, but I'm not even sure how many times Sergeant would have won it, only a handful of times, let's put it that way, if I stick to my guns. And he would love nothing more than to win this league and going for it. So he's definitely built a stronger panel, there's no doubt about it. He has way more options than he had before, and he has timed the run of Lee Chin, which is a big thing, because he got little or not now Lee Chin in the championship last year. So he is a massive player for them.
So he must have done well to go in, give his team talk, do his all his media obligations, and still have time to get into his car and listen to you. You weren't able to shut you up so obviously on Saturday night at all, Brian. How would he have been able to turn this around?
No. I was Saturday night, so he was hurling Sunday.
Oh, well, shit! Sorry.
Yeah.
Saturday night.
So no, in fairness, but he doesn't like it. You know, it's typical Davey. He'll suit himself. But look, he's only done a reasonable job with Wexford. I think he's brilliant for the game. I think Don Logue did touch on that last night, and I'd fully agree with him. He's brought huge enthusiasm back into Wexford. But I keep saying this: Wexford Park was always a fortress. He talks about this. You know, he's beaten a lot of the big teams down there in Wexford. Yeah, of course he has, because they won those games down there anyway. And he's also has a panel. He's not working with Elise or Offaly. He's working with a team that is, the base of their team is three Leinster under 21 championships. These are not mugs he's working with. And there's a strong club hurling down there. They have huge numbers playing in Fitzgibbon hurling as well. So he has a lot of talent at his disposal.
Yeah.
And that's why people have been critical of him over the last couple of years, because his game has been hugely negative.
Well,
when he gets to All Ireland quarter final stage, he doesn't have anything else.
Well, that's the thing. So if Wexford treat a league game, Wexford for me are a little bit off those top teams. So if they treat a league game like a championship game, and they came back from 8 points down against Tip and Kilkenny, like, are Tip and Kilkenny at that pitch when they're contending for All Ireland's? I don't know about that, but it can't be taken away from him. I'd say agree with you, Brian. I think he targets the league, and it would be a great one for them to win.
And it would be brilliant.
Those two comebacks, they reflect on a very happy squad and a very together squad, and reflect on very well on the manager to be coming back from 8 points down against two huge teams like that.
It was psychologically, it's a big thing, obviously, and the Tipperary game in particular, but Noel McGrath sending off at a big bearing in that game, because I was at it myself. Kilkenny yesterday, let's be honest, like, I tipped Wexford to win that game beforehand, but like, looking at that Kilkenny team, like, we all know Kilkenny has slipped over the last couple of years anyway, let alone missing four or five key starters: TJ Reid, Colin Fenley, Killian Buckley, you know, Joey Holden, maybe to a lesser extent, and that's just off the top of my head. So Richie Hogan only coming on, so like, you'd fully expect Wexford, with more or less their full team, to win that at home, given the talent that Brian Coley had, I suppose.
Yeah, no, well, that's true. Jeez, the Offaly pundits are taking a right beating this week, Cheddar, aren't they? Between Deignan and Carroll here, and the whole lot, Davey and Don Logue, who are thick as thieves, the two of them too.
Brian, I didn't realise that, because you he was referring to. Just one other point there. I think the panel was very unfair on Liam Dunn last night, as if, you know, that he was a complete failure with Wexford prior to Davey. Liam dragged Wexford up to real respectability. Maybe in his last year, things didn't work out the way Liam would have liked it. But I think sometimes there's sort of lazy remarks about the effort that's put in by, and particularly Liam Dunn in that situation. And I just wanted to make that point.
Yeah, Brian.
That's very valid point. Yeah, Liam Dunn did bring Wexford hurling back big time, and they had a couple of big wins, and they beat Clare as well, Davies Clare as well. Fully agree. Yeah, last year petered out a little bit. Sometimes that can happen with managers, and like, that's just unfortunate, especially when you're training your own. But no, I fully agree with that one, Cheddar.
You've mentioned Chris Nolan already, Brian, so we won't mention him. He scored 1-4. He got 1-4 in the Joe McDonagh Cup. And always, when kind of, as a casual hurling fan like myself, when you think of Carly, you think of Marty Kavanagh. You know, Chris Nolan doesn't get the same kind of headlines as Marty Kavanagh at all, even though he's, you know, up there. And he's just
not a free taker.
That's it, yeah.
He's doing it day in, day out from play. I've seen him firsthand with Mount Leinster Rangers as well, and he was excellent that day against us with Cullery. And I've noticed him now. He's caught my eye for the last couple of years, even though he's a young man.
What age is he?
I rate him really high. He's in the early 20s.
Early 20s, right, okay, so he's around for a while. So Stephen,
well, the young man's game has grown, as he said, he's the oldest forward of the day at 24.
Did
people
you see that?
People are asking me to go back Offaly. Are you mad or what?
But Limerick only started six of their All-Ireland winning team against Laois the other night, which is a little bit disappointing from a Laois point of view, you know, that they weren't able to stay a little bit closer. Stephen and Shane Bennett are nominating them equally. Stephen, interestingly, Stephen stayed on the freeze with Pádraig O'Mahony back, so I thought that was an interesting little thing. The only team we haven't mentioned that deserves a mention, obviously, is Tipperary. And obviously the middle section, if he hadn't talked so much in part one, we were going to do a full part two on Tipperary. And now the poor Tipperary only get a mention at the end of the show. Michael Breen got six from play. And from midfield, Jason Ford got 1-13, 1-4 from play. He went off injured. Tipperary looked very, very, very impressive, lads, yesterday. They're back from a week in warm weather training, and then you wonder what having funds and having money behind you can do. They train three times a day, apparently. Tommy Dunn was interviewed at half time during the game, and he said they spent time improving the speed of their hurling. Saw evidence of that. Liam Sheedy mentioned in his interview last night with League Sunday, he said they moved the ball through the lines very well. Definitely saw evidence of that as well. So it's amazing, Cheddar, how much work you can get in on a lovely dry pitch, where you've got a five sessions in 5 days designed around what you're going to do with the ball when you get it. Like, I mean, it's not rocket science. If you've got the time and you've got the resources and you've got a week to go away, like, the proof will be in the pudding. Because I think Tipperary, and I've said this on the show, Tipperary had an identity crisis. They didn't yesterday. There was a method to how they wanted to play. And they don't necessarily need to go down the road of copying Limerick, because that's unique. That's Limerick. That's what suits Limerick's players. Tipperary are in a unique position in that they have probably the most talented forward line, you know, in the country. Why shouldn't they play to their strengths?
Look, the performance yesterday was exceptional. And I suppose it had one other thing that Tip team didn't seem to have in the last couple of years. They had real pace about themselves around the field. But I just wonder just how much of that, though, was because of sort of Cork's lack of conviction yesterday. You know, you'd see Cork corner backs trailering a Tip corner forward out to the sideline and 10, 15 metres behind him. Like, you'd rarely see that anymore. And I remember I saw Cork against Kilkenny in Nolan Park earlier on in the league there, and they were much better at that now. And, you know, that was a very competitive game. But, you know, some of their backs were still, they just didn't seem to be really, really sharp. Whether that's due to, you know, heavy training and that. And I'd say John is really, really looking to find a couple of players. I think he's found them, and now he'll concentrate on the Munster Championship. But, you know, back to your point, Willie, Tip, you know, definitely were good. But look, some of the things that have hurt Tip in the last couple of years, and particularly the positioning of 3 and 6, still doesn't seem to be. They've gone back to the same where they were there previously. And you know, so I think there's still some things to fix. One of the things that they've definitely fixed, and we spoke about this the last day, Willie, was their hurling method, how they play. And I agree with you, you know, you don't copy anybody else. You play to the strengths of your players. And Tipperary have simply some of the best touch players going. So they'll play to the way they want to play. And Eamon has a different way of looking at things. Eamon O'Shea has a different way of looking at things than, for example, you know, the way Limerick look at it and that. He sort of gives the tools to the players to play with a little bit more freedom, maybe a little bit less structure than the way you'll see Limerick play. And I think I saw a lot of that in Parky Rin yesterday. You know, they were really buzzing around the place with a lot of confidence. And I know I'll go back to the very first point you made, Willie. If you're away for a week like that and you can focus in on that, one of the advantages of it is that you have all your players every single minute of the day, and you can take, you know, you can really, really build on things, particularly the method of play, and rehearse. And what you're trying to do is build a common understanding between all your players so they know where things are going to go on that. And obviously, you know, a week like that is going to be a benefit to do that.
Yeah, geez, Bubbles did something yesterday in the second half. He there was a ball bulleted in him along the ground, and he was able to rise it with the hurley and turn all in the same movement. Brian, did you see that? They showed it on the League Sunday even last night. It was like, oh, when you compare that to Laois fellas, I thought, you know, trying to get it up and maybe need two goes at it or coming off the hurley, he actually rose it and turned all in the same movement.
Ah, yeah, but Bubbles, we all know about his skill. You know, he's some of the best wrists in Ireland at the moment, you know, over the last number of years. So when he turns it on, he can make the ball sing, in fairness to him. And Yeah, look, I think there are players that can do that in Leash as well, to be fair to them. So it's sometimes it's just the sheer number side of things. And Bubbles has had his own struggles as well, because intercounty hurling is a lot more than just being skillful too.
Yeah.
So,
he seems to be definitely buzzing now.
Yeah, he's getting back in there now. Yeah. It's good to see that. But look, Sheedy's very good at that, getting players back in and getting confidence in them. And I think Shemi Canlan was in a similar situation under Sheedy when Sheedy first took over with Tipperary as well. And you know, so you see the player that he turned out to be in the end. So they've huge talent, some of these players. It's just about getting probably the final piece of the jigsaw for some of these players for intercounty hurling when you want to win All Ireland, obviously.
Yeah.
And that's what they want. But you touch on it, it's another story we probably can have another day, but the whole idea of going away on a training camp and the benefits of that, they're huge. And we were away on one prior to winning a national league title against Wexford. Actually, hilariously, a Division 2 title against Wexford and in 2009. But that was a brilliant camp and great for the speed of the hurling. And I mentioned that earlier when I talked about Leash and Limerick. It's the speed of the hurling, and you're able to repeat that. Those training camps are fantastic.
Yeah, no, definitely. Cathal Barrett was back as well, and he did a great job on Patrick Horgan. He's a real spoiler that you need, isn't he, Cheddar? Like, I mean, there's definitely divilment in him. But it just before we finish up, it's the balance in that forward line. Niall O'Mara played centre half forward and was buzzing all over the field, it looked like to me. Jason Ford was wearing 12, but he was playing at full forward. Shemi Callanan was out around the half forward line. He's trying to find the right balance there. You know, your man Morris has a bit of life about him. He's in the corner. Bubbles can make like a talk, like Brian is saying, and I don't know, like, I mean, Bubbles nearly, you say, go do what you want to do, don't curtail him to a corner at all. So looking at those six, and you have John McGrath, who maybe wasn't at his top form. Looking at that, the fashion now is to have a working half forward line. I'm not sure that is necessarily Tip's kind of correct blend, is it?
I don't think it's the fashion, Willie. You know, just keep referring back to this point. You play to the strengths of the players that you have. And, you know, asking Bubbles to track back the field, it's unlikely to happen.
I'm not being disrespectful
to Bubbles. I love seeing him play. He's an incredible, incredible hurler. So is what I think this is what Eamon O'Shea will bring to this team, and Brian has referred to what Liam will bring to it, and it's that I think what Brian has said is really, really important here. The ability of Liam Sheedy to get into the player's head, find a mindset and get him to the player to the best of his ability. He's done it before, he'll do it again, and Eamon O'Shea will look after the way the team plays, and Eamon O'Shea will make the team play to the strengths of the forward line, not to any whim or any ranking the way Limerick or Wexford or Davy or anybody else is doing, to the strengths of the players he has. And the players he has are really incredibly first touch players. And if you have first touch, the critical thing it does with you at county level is it buys you time. And you give any of those players 1 second on the ball and they'll have it over the bar before you even get a chance to raise your hurley to block it down. So he is a different type of player, certainly, than probably any other county, to be honest with you, at the minute. And they're a serious, serious team. I do think, though, that when they play a structured team like Limerick, Limerick will open up the spaces in that full back line and the channels again. And you know, I'd still worry a little bit about them. I think their quickness and their ability to be able to deal with one on ones if they're not going to go with a defensive screen, you know, in big games is going to cause them some problems. I've heard what you said about Pat Horgan. I just thought Cork were a little bit off colour.
They were terrible.
And you know, bear in mind that's the first round of the Munster Championship. I know it's in Parky Cove and has a completely different bearing of that. If Parky Cove is going to be ready for it, but you know, it was interesting that Cork, that Tip walloped them. It wasn't a competitive game.
It was 125-9 points at one point. Harrandy was sent out. But even the defending for the Ford goal, Brian. Like, I mean, Cahalan, like, I mean, that's the most, that, but I would have caught that ball. That ball didn't even have any pace on it. Like, that was just a kind of a looping ball that was an easy catch, and he drops it out of his hand and then falls over. They're a comedy of errors, Cork. But again, you have to keep qualifying this, saying we don't know what they're doing in training. We don't know how much focus they're doing on it. They've bigger fish to fry. They're double Munster champions. So, like, I mean, double Munster champions don't just become a poor team overnight. It's the problem with this league and no relegation, and it will be the problem for future leagues until it's changed again, that no team's going to worry about relegation now. So we'll always be going through the league. To be honest, I'm delighted we're at the knockout stage of this league, that we can actually start maybe taking a game seriously and actually analysing it.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't go as far to say you catch it, but you know, Catalan definitely.
Would a sheepdog catch it?
Yeah, no, look, he should have held on to it, but what's worse is it was wide open when he got through. Cork shadow boxing completely, I thought, went through the motions. Like, I think they'll trouble that tip back line, though. I think that's, you know, yeah, we're eulogising about these tip forwards, of course, they're fantastic and they are brilliant. You know, Cheddar alluded to it there. That back line will have a very testing time against that Cork forward line. And you add in Pat Horgan when he's in form, Conor Lehan, you know, Seamus Harnady, Kingston,
Cadigan.
Alan Cadigan back yesterday, got the first point yesterday, buzzing. I know he went off injured again, but like, you get him back, maybe throw in the likes of Aidan Walsh to physically add something to that as well. That Cork forward line is going to cause real havoc.
Yeah, you know, Kearney was out as well, and Fitzgibbon and Coleman only came on.
You put Fitzgibbon and Mark Coleman bursting up the field then as well. Like, that's a totally different dynamic.
Yeah.
No, they were very poor yesterday, and it's as poor a showing as we've seen from Cork in a long, long time. But they just seem to be just looking towards the end of the league. I don't know if they're playing club championship, maybe. I don't know if they'd one eye on that, but they'll definitely go ahead and play the relegation. There was talk of them not playing that relegation, but both themselves and Kilkenny now will be glad to play it and get the boys' suspensions out of the way.
Yeah, no, exactly. Right, lads, we'll leave it there. That's definitely been a long show, but sure, I suppose when we have weaker counties to talk about, that's when Cheddar comes into his own here, and we can't
just Brian, we'll take a big exception to that. That's all we will.
Yeah, big exception to that, but it's about time we spend a little bit of time and not always eulogise about the top teams.
Yeah, exactly. True. Right, listen, we'll be back on Thursday and we'll have no choice but to talk about the top teams because there's three quarter finals, but like I said, we'll do something on Wicklow, who won Division 2A 2B final as well at the weekend. Right, talk to you on Thursday. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.